Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
I've got a college football off-season project like never before. And equal parts confusion and confirmation. It is the Chuck Oliver Show. On a Tuesday, I hope everybody is having a fantastic existence. Wherever it is that you are listening today, we're in 9 states and I think 58 sticks is the total. It was 56, 58 now. So I appreciate everybody coming here and getting your conversation. There's something different in Tuscaloosa. And I've got a college football off-season project, I say, like never before. I am trying to find out what is different in Tuscaloosa in a less than great way, a less than elite way, for the first time since Nick Saban got there. And when I say less than elite, Alabama tied for the division championship last year. Lost two games, but tied for the division championship, went to the Sugar Bowl, won it, finished number five in America. There are other years that we have looked at Alabama, and they have finished, quote, as low as number five, and our resounding response has been, well, what's wrong? 2019 didn't even win the West. Finished eighth overall. 2013, oh yeah, it was that year. Lost the Sugar Bowl, finished eighth in America. Go back to 2010, finished fourth in their own division. Now, somehow fourth in the West, still equal 10th nationally. But that is all because of so many other seasons where the finish, and I'm just going to go in order. The final ranking, 1-1-1-7-4-1-2-1-2-1. You get what it is. Much national championships and this, that, and everything else, and that is where the standard is, and it's different now. And I don't just say, see, I'm going through the win-loss record, and I extracted where they finished outside the top five and went in order for the rest of those. It's unprecedented, like literally unprecedented. And so I'm not just talking about, hey, they lost two games and didn't even really win the West. Mm-mm. That's because that can always be context. Alabama lost three games in 2010. There was no context about big picture with the program. It was a hiccup like they have never had since because that was an uber-talented team. Literally was a hiccup. When I say something's different, so far, all I have given is the win-loss records. And there could be context, and you could see that it's a team like 2010 that really is a championship-level team, but my gosh, look at all the stuff that happened. Or it could be a different situation. And didn't your mind just go to, like, where Alabama is right now? When I'm talking about an Alabama team that, for instance, the 2013 team, if you go back to 2013, was Alabama championship quality? Absolutely they were. And if not for that thing on the field goal, remember Alabama was undefeated, ranked number one. And so when that thing on the field goal happened, suddenly Alabama goes from 11-0, number one in America, and that kid's about to kick them into Atlanta, and they'll beat the dog out of Missouri. So, Bama, man, we got a titanic matchup on the way. Alabama and probably Florida State. Didn't happen that way because Alabama lost to Auburn on that field goal thing, and then the Sugar Bowl happened, and all of a sudden they're 11-2. Do you know what 2013 Alabama was? A great, 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 great national championship quality team that finished with two losses and was number 8 in America. You know what last year's Alabama team was? You don't think of it the same way, do you? I don't. There's something different. And different, not good. Different, just a little less. There are plenty of campuses you look around, and just the SEC, things are different at Auburn now, different good than they were, say, middle of October. Things are different in Tuscaloosa when it comes to the quality of the on-field play, the results, what it looks like snap to snap, everything from soup to nuts. It looks a little different. And when this different is, it looks a little less elite, a little less great, a little less good. And so I've been trying to figure out, like, I've never had an off-season. I have all kinds of things that I just scribble out on my yellow legal pad with my black ink pen, and I just start rolling and go off in 58 different directions in an off-season. I've never had an off-season project where I am trying to figure out why Nick Saban's Alabama program, not last year's team, that was 2013. Hey, what was up with last year's team? Oh, a guy returned a field goal 109 yards. Oh, that's what was up with it. What was up with last year's Alabama? And it ain't the same. And we all, like anybody listening right now, you're going, mm-hmm, yeah, 2013, that's way different than what happened last year. And when I say confusion and confirmation in equal parts, here is, I have an idea, like 14 spokes off the hub, but I have one of my ideas is I'm looking at the strength and conditioning program. And I want to say it was ahead of the 2020 season. David Ballou gets hired. And he's at Indiana. And I remember the big story, universally praised. And David Ballou, I was like, boy, nobody goes to Indiana football when they're looking to get better. Nick Saban just did, this David Ballou guy. And I had heard that it's a whole different approach and a lot more technology. And he had his assistant, his right-hand person, to come with him. And so he was going to transform things. Got hired in March 2020. Had been at IU with Tom Allen. And so David Ballou and his assistant come to Tuscaloosa, and it's a whole makeover. And that was just fine that Scott Cochran went to Athens. It was just fine. I can't tell you how it's worked out with Scott. I know the program's won two national championships since then, so I guess it's worked. Everything Kirby's done has worked out on balance. But I look at David Ballou and – again, people who know this, and I do not, people who know about what makes a great director of sports performance or strength and conditioning coach or strength and conditioning program. Oh, my goodness, David Ballou. You still got to sling iron around, but it's a more scientific approach with David Ballou. Is the strength and conditioning program, the physical preparedness for Alabama players, the issue? I don't know that it is. I think it may be some of the individual guys who are reporting to Coach David Ballou. Like, I think maybe that's the issue. But, could be. When I say equal parts confusion and confirmation, look at the numbers. Alabama, they tested well at the combine. Particularly the linemen. They tested fine. They didn't at the Senior Bowl. And so I'm confused because I get confirmation in one way. I'm like, what if it's David Ballou's fault, the new guy? Well, I'm going to look at how these guys that are departing the program after having been with David Ballou, who he might have dive-bombed the entire thing. I went and looked at the Senior Bowl numbers. And I think it was some of the D-line I'm trying to recall, but I'm like, maybe they didn't play so well or test so well. So that's confirmation. Yeah, it's David Blue's fault. Then you look at the combine and you're like, no, actually, Alabama players tested just fine. I don't know. It may be coaching and development. It may be strength and conditioning. I don't know. I checked, literally, folks, I checked exactly two results. Senior Bowl, Combine. Got opposite ends of the spectrum. This is the latest edition, like the 2023 version of National Championship or Bust in Tuscaloosa, but this one feels different. There's that word again. And part of that is, now I'm going to fast forward all the way down the road. If there is a next one, and I've never said that about Alabama since Nick Saban started collecting them like they were stray animals. If there is a next national championship, room of truth, Bama fans, you too, we're on in Tuscaloosa. If there's a next one, won't it feel like the last one with Saban? That's different too. Now, at the impossible level of excellence, elite greatness, all-time everything that Nick Saban set the bar, it's different from that. Still good enough to win 11 or 12 games and finish number 5 in America and do everything except make the playoffs. Still good enough to do all that. That's not where it is. And Nick Saban, he would be yelling, can't we just be happy that the kids played a game and they won? And yeah, well, yeah, they did it like 12 times. I'm really happy for them. That's not what you're about. You're not. At Alabama, it is more than that. So you go 11-2, it's fantastic. It's not what you're about. All right, why? Well, the offensive line, now, we'll be specific here. The offensive line, it's not the same. Alabama dominance on the offensive line, tackle to tackle. That's something that this current group has only heard others talk about. That's something that they've heard the stories. Gather around, kids. We're going to talk about Barrett Jones. The offensive line has been, at more than any other position group on the team, you look at it week after week after week, and they've had kids step up enough to continue to achieve at a really high level, but it's that whole put the tackle at tight end thing, and I'm like, why are we having to do this? Why isn't Jonah Williams playing right tackle again for a year and being great at it? So it's noticeable that it's not at that unreal level of eliteness anymore. Wide receiver. Now, this goes to a different problem. Because I don't know why the offensive line hadn't performed. I think those kids are just fine. Wide receiver, I don't know if they're not focused. I don't know if they were over-recruited. But now 2 years in a row, I'm looking at you bring in a crop of freshman wide receivers, and we had gotten used to freshmen performing like, you know, those guys. And if you go back and look at the great legacy and Amare and Julio and then Devonta and Jalen Waddle, all of them. We got used to that being what happened when you showed up as a 5-star freshman receiver at Alabama. That's not real at almost any place, especially at receiver. It was real at Alabama, and it's how the next, and we're like, yeah, that's normal. Well, suddenly with JoJo Earl, it ain't normal anymore. At Jai Hall, it's not normal. Last year, I don't know if that I saw Prentice emerge and Law, and I saw all kinds of like indicators of – I didn't see anybody really take stuff over. And we'd kind of got used to that. So I will say, at the insane, impossible to attain, much less continue level of recruiting Alabama had reached, yeah, it's less. It's different, and in not a good way. It's less different. Wide receiver in particular, there has been a dip compared to Bama in recruiting and in wide receiver. My gosh. Or maybe it's development. But whether it's you over-recruited, you didn't evaluate the kid right, or you over-recruited him as a priority, or stopped recruiting others when you got his name, or, I don't know, maybe he didn't develop, and maybe that's on you. Maybe he's just a sorry kid. That happens sometimes. Boy, what a stud. He's a sorry, sorry kid. That happens. I don't know. And that's the first thing I was like, folks, I'm getting equal parts confirmation and confusion here. I just know that this is different and it's not good. And suddenly, for the first time ever, I'm using the word if with Nick Saban and another national championship. And then, again, room of truth. Throw that Wonder Woman lasso thing around all the Alabama fans listening right now. You too. You too. If there's another one, close your eyes. You see Nick Saban holding up that ugly trophy with the confetti falling. And you're thinking, he got one more. I've never used the phrase one more with Nick Saban. If the confetti's falling out of the sky and he's got the Gatorade on the shirt and all that, every one of us is thinking, he got one more. Good for him. So, I don't know. Do you reverse this at this point? You can. You're so, microscopically close to getting back to where you were. But the problem is you're getting further away. And when you have, you're trending and you're, it's creep. You're slowly moving, but in the, you're slow molasses in the wrong way, though. And that's how you have something like a team where you got a pair of sophomores as your leaders. Richard freshman as your leaders year before that. That's not a good thing at a place like Bama or anywhere in the SEC, especially there. All right, we're going to break, come back. Well, we got Dave Bartu coming up in about 15 minutes. But we'll break, come back. More of me next.
Back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
We can see those opportunities. And obviously, with that fan support comes great opportunities for our games with the current legislation inside of NIL for those guys to have real value and have real opportunity here. And I think you put all of those things together, this is a really powerful experience.
Josh Heupel. Pimping the ball's ability to break off their recruits and their players. That's kind of what it is, I believe. It's just media. He's talking to us, not was on any radio show or anything. So he was on a call with media and was saying, this is how awesome we are here at Tennessee. And they're putting together a resume. Putting together a little bit more of a resume of winning. And that's really, that's the outcome. The step, the most important thing possible. I love the advantage X's and O's you get with a guy like Josh Heupel, and you do. His expertise is the reason. They're being assaulted the same way. The program is being assaulted the same way all winning programs are, by losing great players and by having other programs come for their coaches. That's nothing new. What they're doing is they're in a lot better position to withstand that because of, first of all, Joe Milton in particular, but recruiting in particular overall, and the fact that they've got the real play caller, the advantage with the play sheet, he's still part of the program. So the exact same thing, everybody else, Clemson's losing players and coaches. Losing players to the NFL and other programs, attacking their depth, and then they're losing coaches who get hired away. Same stuff's happening in Tennessee. Now, it wasn't for a while. They weren't losing nearly enough players. You want to lose a lot of players to the draft. Kirby looked up and said, oh, dang, I lost five studs last year in the first round of the NFL draft just on defense. Oh, that must mean we're pretty good. So you kind of want to live with it. Clark Lee, do you know what Clark Lee wants? He wants to look at his coaching staff the first day of spring and go, I don't know half these guys. We just had to hire a search firm and get six assistants. Nobody's going to Nashville looking to poach your staff. So he's talking name, image, likeness, which I've always said, you have to keep just that thin layer of distinction there that recruiting isn't an outcome. That's one thing we can talk. We got Dave Bartu coming up. And that's one thing we can talk about with him is that there's a difference between, for instance, are you a top 20 recruiter, but you're not a top 20 coach? Your program's not a top 20 program, but you're a top 20 recruiter. So you're bringing in what is generally agreed upon as top 20 talent. And if your pushback is that's just recruiting, we don't, then what you're saying is, yeah, the talent I brought into the program, it's not nearly as good as you thought it was. So what you were giving me credit for, because you're not giving me credit for winning, and now I'm saying don't give me credit for recruiting either. That's a tough response. So just got to keep that thin layer of distinction. Tyreek Stevenson is a kid. I was talking about Kirby. I mentioned Kirby there and his five first-round picks off of defense last year. That number, I don't know, did we put an asterisk on that? Because if at least revise it, their record-setting first round on defense from last year's draft, I don't know, maybe it's an asterisk beside the five first-round picks on defense in one draft. Jermaine Johnson already last year was a first-round pick, and he was an example of a kid who had to leave the program to get a lot of playing time. There are two types. I have to leave the program to get playing time, and I have 1 year left, and I'm going somewhere else to ball out. I haven't played at the major program, and there's, I've played 3 or 4 years at Tulsa, I got 1 year left. And those are a lot of the stories, like the success stories. I had 3 or 4 years at Hawaii, now I've got 1 year at Michigan. We all kinds of guys leaving Athens, they're looking at the depth chart going, eh, this isn't working for me. So if you want to put an asterisk beside the five first-round picks from last year, one of those who looked at the depth chart and was like, yeah, no. Jermaine Johnson. He's already a first-round pick last year. So there's a chance we put an asterisk there and say it was six-ish sort of first-round pick from UGA last year. Tyreek Stevenson, he could be a first-rounder this year, and you will see character concerns with him. I would say don't dismiss those. He is in the third category. He didn't transfer because of depth chart, or he transferred because he wanted to go hang out with his friends in Miami. So that's his choice, and he may still be a friend.
Spring is here, and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. King of College Football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. And our next guest, he hears from all kinds of folks. I don't know, NFL, college, fans, border regents, a little bit of something for everybody. I don't know if he's heard from other radio stations or other media outlets as a result of this, but he's open for business, man. He had a laptop, and he understood ones and zeros, and so Dave Bartu decided he was going to apply his knowledge to football and recruiting and personnel, and now it has grown into a full-fledged business. To him, it's widgets, man, and he's actually kind of I think observing and like cautiously dipping his toe in the college basketball pool now. But it's a lot of, like I said, it's a lot of ones and zeros, and he understands all of them. He is college football matrix. Want to welcome him on for his regular Tuesday visit, Dave Bartu. How are you, brother?
Dude, I'm doing good. It's all numbers. That's all it is, right? We just need a data set to try to create a predictive behavior model. And whether it's college football or NFL or turns out NBA, WNBA, college basketball, it's all the same damn thing. That's it. Just numbers. And once we got enough data, we can figure out how the behavior works. And and if there is a line on it to bet, then we can try to do that too.
Yeah, and you had started with, like I said, your college basketball experimentation, and you were winning at about a 58-59% clip. But I said, here's the key, folks. If you're winning at a 58% clip, you're only losing at a 42% clip. That is a 16% spread. That is high cotton.
It is, you know, when you start, I didn't realize it that much until you start getting into really big volume. So, you know, I fired the model back up that I created last year. And started doing it 2 weeks ago. And in that time frame, modeled over 500 basketball games. I can't believe how many basketball games there are. Holy moly, they undermarket. I can tell you one thing, Chuck, they undermarket this. You can bet 30 games a day for a month. It is unbelievable. But I think I finished in the 12-day period 79 games above 500, which was like 56.8% or something like that. And it didn't seem like that much, but if you were a $100 better, you were up like $9,000.
Dave, no, like I said, people who just aren't experienced bettors look at it and go, well, 57.8%, that's barely above 500, you know, 50, that's not that good. I was like, no. That means he's only losing like 43%. Like, that spread is what you're after there, and that's where you show the difference. All right, I was texting with you earlier today, and you have dossiers on all kinds of assistant coaches and coordinator candidates and everybody. I'd asked you about one guy, the Northwestern offensive line coach, because here is my premise. First of all, Rashawn Slater last year was a rookie. He started at left tackle for a playoff team. All 17 games and was second team all pro. I was like, all right, what else you got? Well, they have Peter Skoronski, and I'm going to tell some team in the top 10, you are about to be as unimpressed, almost to the point of slumber, when your team takes a guard from a Northwestern team that went 1-11 and couldn't score. I was like, trust me, he plays for Kurt Anderson. That guy puts guys in the pros. That's all I know, is that Kurt Anderson, the offensive line coach at Northwestern, puts dudes in the pros. Is there any further insight if, like, the head coach at North Carolina or FIU was looking to trade up? What does Pat Fitzgerald have with Kurt Anderson?
Oh, from an offensive line coach, very, very good. And it's beyond the coaching. It's the ability to go in and find these guys across America and bring them in and develop them. I got to admit, I really don't believe in, especially at upper end recruiting, I really don't believe in development that much. You know, this whole linebacker you, quarterback you, I think it's all a bunch of crap. It's how good you can recruit. I think you have to see the forest through the trees and really find where do programs develop guys. And is it the program or the coach? Because, you know, you look at Utah, you look at Iowa, you look at Wisconsin, coaches come and go, but they keep churning out a lot of draft picks relative to their recruiting. So when you look at Northwestern, there's part of me that almost wants to gravitate to the guy that is successful on an unsuccessful team, because it means he's good. Right? I mean, it wasn't like he was surrounded with good talent to make him look good. And you and I have had this discussion a lot with quarterbacks, right? I mean, it's a quarterback from these elite talented programs. They're surrounded with great players. They actually don't have to learn the position. So, you know, a guy at a Northwestern, a sub 500 team, that guy actually might be better than he actually is, because he was hidden behind a bad team. But the tough thing is GMs like to protect themselves. See, everybody says, oh, if you're good, they'll find you. Yeah, but it helps to be on a good team, because a GM doesn't want to get fired for drafting a guy from a bad program, case in point, last 10 years, 76% of all NFL draft picks come from teams above 500 in the FBS. 76%. Even though 29% of all the NFL starts are undrafted free agents, GMs are still gravitating toward See, you start seeing
Go back and say those two numbers again.
Right, 76% of the draft picks come from 500 or better schools. Okay, yeah. So what that tells me is when a GM, so when Chuck Oliver is going, okay, do I take the dude from 1-11 Northwestern or the dude from 11-1 Alabama? Well, the guy at Northwestern's better, but they have the same bust rate. I'm going to go with the Alabama guy because if he busts, nobody's going to get mad at me, Chuck.
Probably wasn't my fault. It was the guy. Maybe it was his knee.
Right.
Or maybe.
Right. But if you drop the guy from Northwestern and he busts, oh, what a stupid pick. That program is terrible. You're not drafting the program. You're drafting the guy. Right? You're drafting his health and his ability and his mind. And it shouldn't matter what the team's record is, but it does, because if you're a GM, you know, you've got a $100,000 a month job. You don't want to sacrifice that. You don't want to take a risk. You'll try to get that guy as an undrafted free agent from the schools that are performing poorly and get them in the NFL. So that other number, 29% of the starts coming from, well, it's not, I don't think it's that high. I think 19% come from undrafted free agents. I'd have to look at the numbers, but it's a crazy, crazy stat how many undrafted free agents make it and stick and play in the NFL. And I think it comes down to the hypothesis that GMs are not willing to take a risk on guys from crappier programs or perceived crappier programs because of the potential backlash when they bust.
If I spent a first-round pick on the tackle out of Michigan and he's no good, that's probably not my fault. If I take a tackle out of Hofstra?
Yep.
Oh, you remember, he took the tackle out of Hofstra. Like, they talk about that GM forever. He took the guy out of Hofstra.
Right. That's exactly it. So you can see the self-preservation when it comes down to the draft, you know, in terms of what these guys are doing.
Dave Bartu, this is the kind of insight he offers. I do want to jump into the ACC before we take our break here. And I was mentioning yesterday that Mario, you know, his fruit basket turnover, I think one of the coordinators left, admittedly, but the fallout from that actually affected even the analyst staff. But both coordinators, I think it was four more assistant coaches, so 6 out of 10 total. On net, do you think Mario is in a better spot now? And I will say, it's almost like it's year one again. So I don't think you have any traction or anything. Like, it's almost like 2022 was a wasted season with Mario. But on balance, do you think the staff is better?
On balance, yes. Okay. Now, I have to profess a little bit of bias towards all the staffing. Okay. So I have a vested interest in them doing well. Where I think the upgrades were, I think there was a big upgrade in defensive coordinator. Kevin Steele has been solid for his career, but I think Lance Guidry has a higher ceiling. And I believe that you're going to get more
Willie
energy
Fritz
out of
that
it.
Too.
Right? Yeah, well, Willie was pretty lucky that that Lance was there. I couldn't believe Lance was there when it came Tulane's turn to draft a DC. And because look, Lance was the number one DC, in my opinion, for Miami a year ago. It just took him a year to get him. So I personally believe, by the numbers, that's an upgrade. I think the biggest upgrade is at linebacker coach. Okay, I wasn't a proponent of Charlie Strong for several reasons. One, he hadn't been a linebacker coach in 15 years, so we didn't even have a grade on him. Two, when he was at head coach at South Florida, the worst recruited position when he cratered that program was linebacker. And with him wanting to be a head coach, getting buried at linebacker, he's probably going to be an emotional pain in the butt because he wanted to be a head coach again. So the only way he's going to be a head coach is being a DC. So I thought there was a lot of issues with Charlie Strong. So I believe that was a huge upgrade at linebacker to, was it Nicholson?
Yeah.
In that regard, Rod Wright, love him as a coach, top 10 edge coach. Talked to a lot of NFL teams about him. Been targeting him for a long time. He's an excellent coach. Don't think he likes the recruiting side. So I don't think there was an addition there from a coaching standpoint. I think he's as good as it gets. And I think the NFL made a good move. I think he personally made a good move getting away from the recruiting. Jason Taylor, I think he'll fill in good. I don't have him graded high as a edge coach yet because, well, he hasn't coached at the defensive end. But recruiting-wise, I think he'll make up where Roderick was lacking there. I think the biggest question is offensive coordinator. And we saw coming into this that nobody really had – look at Tommy Reese went to Alabama. I can't remember. Who did Notre Dame get? Notre Dame got – you know, I mean, nobody –
their tight ends coach. Jared Parker.
that's right.
When did Jared
that's
Parker?
Right. Who says day drinking isn't a thing in South Bend? That was funny as heck. So we'll see what Shannon Dawson does. Don't have enough information on him. Been calling plays for 2 years at Houston. Before that, there was a downside to it. So we got a really wide goalpost on what to expect out of Shannon Dawson. We'll see if that's an upgrade over time.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're heading to Fayetteville, Arkansas, where if you're an Arkansas fan at the spring game and you're looking at the new OC and thinking he looks a lot like the old OC, yeah, we'll cover that. That's Dave Bartu next, Chuck Oliver Show.
It's always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the King of College Football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show, it is hour one on a Tuesday, and we're talking with Dave Bartu on Twitter, at CFB Matrix. Dave, tell everybody what it is you do, please.
Well, I tell stories with numbers. You give me a data set, and I spit out what we hope is good results for putting you on the right side of them. So it's just creating edges in the data. This is simply what we do.
And when you say help you, you're talking about athletic directors, head coaches, whomever, agents?
Everything, right? I mean, it's agents, it's coaches, it's players, it's ADs, it's board. I mean, we've helped hire ADs. We've done everything you can think of in college football with the data set. We've helped with fundraising. We've helped ADs be better fundraisers with their money because we have a data set. So it doesn't matter what it is. We either need to use the data to find behaviors or start collecting the data properly so we can use the data to find behaviors.
All right. And finally, I'm going to just get selfish here. Hempforpros.com, is that the website of your sponsor,
that's
your partner?
That's the website. Yeah, actually, the partner with the biggest professional sports alumni group in America, the NFL alumni. That's what it was created for. And Hempforpros.com, Pro Athletes Hemp Association. Actually, I'm working on right now, we're in the lab. A lot of guys were asking for energy. Energy gummies. And so because one of the things that CBD does, it helps bind molecules to our bodies better. And so we're about a month away from it, but we're going to be rolling out a product that is basically kind of like a 5-hour energy in a gummy, except you don't have the big rush, you don't have the big crash, and it lasts about 8 hours, and the downside is it suppresses your appetite. I don't want to eat for the entire day. I got to make myself eat a PB&J with it. But the energy gummies are going to be out in less than a month.
All right, for me. And by the way, I'm going to ask him about the shoulder stuff, and it's legal in all 50. You can have it delivered. I need the shoulder stuff like yesterday. Is there a promo code for your boy and everyone else? Can we work on a promo code?
Actually, right now for the entire month, bet. MBB, bet men's basketball, bet MBB, 25% off of everything online. And but it's really potent stuff. I mean, the pain lotions, like for your shoulder and your back, Chuck, one bottle of that will last 2 to 3 months. So I'll get you hooked up with that after the show.
BetMBB. Outstanding. All right. I said if you're an Arkansas fan, you're like, hey, the new OC, he looks like the old one. That's Dan Enos. He has an interesting reputation. Guy can call plays. He can even be a head coach probably. He is not a warm fuzzy by reputation. I don't know that you care about that. But he has come back to Arkansas. Tell me what you think about Dan Enos and that offense and fit and everything else.
Well, you know me. I mean, culture is important, but what's more important in football is on the offensive side is getting that thing in the end zone. So Dan has we have him in the grade book. We have him calling plays in college football for 6 years. His grade, so coming into the season, we have him graded 36th. In the country as an OC. So very solid. A small step back from Briles. Briles is top 15, so it's almost impossible to expect a replacement for Kendall. But I think Dan is better than what people are giving him credit for. Same thing with Mike Bobo. Same thing with a lot of guys that have a couple of bad years sprinkled in there. So I think Dan's going to be fine. I think it's going to be above average, but there's going to be a process of obviously of play calling and a little bit of change in scheme in terms of how he does things relative to Kendall.
If you talk about a young coach that's been on radars for a minute, Travis Williams, he had been the DC at UCF. Mm-hmm. He's now on the other side of the ball. Arkansas, what's your download on Travis Williams?
A lot of potential here. He's only been a DC calling plays for 2 years. So we really don't have a full profile on him. We don't like handing out grades on guys until we have 3 years, because then they've cycled through players, they've cycled through other coaches. But Travis Williams right now, we have him labeled, we call him a rising star. He's got two solid years. He's going in the right direction. We have him top 40th percentile of DCs right now. Like I said, it's a temporary grade because he's relatively new at this. So we have him 47th in the country coming into the season. I'd say in the SEC, he closely, you could compare him to Tim Banks at Tennessee, Clayton White at South Carolina. Oh. I think that's what he's trending to. Really solid DC. He's not a rock star yet, but not bad either. So I'm interested to see where this goes at Arkansas for him.
All right, so I'd said with T-Will, I believe it's the kid say, he'd been on radars and people knew him, and he was a comer and recruiting all that other stuff. Christian Robinson, is he Travis Williams like 3-4 years ago? Because he's been a guy that everybody's talked about since he's been a GA of, oh, look at the future. And his future has now included a lot of stops. He's in Waco, Texas now.
Yeah, he's had a little bit of run of I'd say bad luck in terms of timing, because his head coaches seem to keep getting fired.
Yep.
He was a rising star as well. Excellent, excellent young linebacker coach. We were not disappointed, but, you know, he got let go of his job in the state of Florida. Then he landed at Auburn. But then, you know, he landed obviously with Brian Harsin, and that didn't go anywhere. Was hoping he would stick at Auburn. Thought he was – him and Cadillac Williams and Will Friend were the best coaches to keep at Auburn. But with Aldridge coming over from Liberty, who is also a very, very good linebacker coach, he got cut loose. So I love where he's at. You know, I like Dave Aranda. You know, I think he's one of the best defensive minds in college football. Yeah. And Christian Robinson, even though he has been kind of journeyman the last couple of years, his numbers still put him top 33% of all linebacker coaches since 2010. I think he has a really, really bright future in college football. Excellent guy to follow and keep track of.
Wrapping up, Dave Bartu, CFP Matrix. All right, you get like 20 to 30 seconds on each of these. Todd Orlando, what is he now to you?
I'm somewhere in between on him, because he's had a really good career, top 25 DC, top 25% DC over his career, but he's been doing it for over a decade now. So a little bit of a change of coaching now. We'll see where that goes. There is a lot of upside to Todd Orlando.
Charles Kelly, Because he's with Deion now.
Hasn't called plays in a long time, dude. It's been like a decade. 3.5-star defensive coach. I think he's okay. But, look, he had great defenses at Florida State, but that's also when they had top three recruits every year for two decades.
So all 11 starters on his 13 defense were drafted.
Yeah. Right? So now the downside, so he hasn't called plays in a decade. And he's getting paired with an offensive coordinator in Sean Lewis that's going to run 90 plays a game. Yeah, I think this is going to be an absolute – if I had to bet on the needle, I'm pointing towards absolute failure on this. Not that he's not a good DC. Yeah. He's not familiar with this environment with the OC. So I think it was an above-average hire for Colorado. I think the situation is really, really tough to be paired with Sean Lewis and the bottom recruiter in the Pac-12.
That's what you get from Dave Bartow, folks. Get him right here for two segments every Tuesday. You can hire him as well. Appreciate you, Dave. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. Wraps up hour one on this Tuesday. Appreciate everybody coming here to the Chuck Oliver Show to get your college football conversation. Going to take a break, come back. Hour two up next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.